Oral questions by members.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
Well, the Premier and the Health Minister have consistently ignored the evidence presented in a leaked memo from Northern Health, as well as the courageous testimonials and voices of nurses. All of these sources reveal that the NDP policy directly supports illicit drug use within hospitals. Now, a shocking second memo from Island Health has been leaked, dated March 12, 2024, directing acute care staff to not only accommodate but actively support drug use in health facilities. The guidelines in the memo are very clearly worded and are intended to facilitate illicit drug use in the hospital. And here's what it says, and I quote, "During admission, expectations co-create a plan for substance use during admission," end quote. Why is the Premier actively facilitating open, illicit drug use in our hospitals, and when will he adopt BC United's policy to end his failed and reckless decriminalisation experiment?
Minister of Health.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Speaker, the position of the government is that we'll take all steps to protect all patients in our hospital and provide them with high quality of care. In order to support that, Honourable Speaker, there will be one policy across British Columbia that lays out the expectations for everyone involved very clearly. And the members of the House and others in British Columbia will see that policy soon. We are working with nurses and health sciences professionals and healthcare workers and experts in the field to ensure that that protects healthcare workers, protects patients, all patients, and ensures that people get high quality of care, including those who are in our hospitals dealing with substance use issues. And we're going to continue to do so. Part of that process, surely, is to engage with all patients entering hospital to ensure they're supported in every possible way. We're going to continue, Honourable Speaker, to take the steps necessary to protect patients, to protect staff, and to protect everyone who has to be, contrary to what they want, have to be admitted into acute care hospitals.
Kelowna Mission supplemental.
Further study and more delay is not going to fix this. The second leaked internal memo is as shocking as the first, and it's dated mere weeks ago. The memo instructs staff clearly, and I quote, "Instead of requiring patients to stop using substances when they access care, staff must work collaboratively with patients," end quote. And it goes further, telling staff to follow patient-identified substance use goals in the hospital, provide drug testing strips, ensure the easy availability of supplies, regularly empty sharps disposal containers, and co-create a plan for substance use during admission. This memo directly contradicts the Premier and the Health Minister's denials and exposes their claims as false. Why is the Premier refusing to even admit the truth? And will he finally adopt BC United's policy to end his disastrous decriminalization experiment?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, we're very clear, and we're very clear now, that we need to act in hospitals in the interests of everybody. Everyone who goes to hospital deserves the highest quality of care. Everybody who goes to hospital needs to leave hospital healthier than they went in. Everybody needs to be protected. That includes people who are in hospital with no substance use issues at all, the very serious other concerns which you have to be admitted to an acute care hospital. It means nurses and doctors and health sciences professionals and healthcare workers who work with all patients in our hospitals. Of course, Honourable Speaker, when people go into a hospital, we have to engage with them with the health issues that they face, Honourable Speaker. And staff will continue to do that, to provide the utmost possible care to everyone in our hospital. But let me be clear to everybody, Honourable Speaker, nobody should have to face secondhand smoke in our hospital. That's not allowed. It won't be allowed. It isn't allowed. and that their interests need to be protected, Honourable Speaker. We have added very significant security staff. I know the opposition is against this, Honourable Speaker. 320 relational security staff, Honourable Speaker, because they have, they've expressed that view in the House, to support our health care workers at the request and recommendation of the BCNU and the HEU and others, and we'll continue to take those actions.
Member for Prince George, Vermont.
Well, first of all, let me make the record very clear. The minister knows that just as recently as yesterday, I asked him to make sure that nurses in Merritt and Quesnel had the security that they need and deserve. So let's get the record straight about who supports what in this legislation. Also be clear, the minister stands up and says he's doing everything possible. I asked him weeks ago to issue a directive to deal with the issue of illicit drug use in hospitals. He refused. And just when you think it can't get any worse, the leaked memo, the second one, exposes an even more dangerous directive. Nurses are now shockingly being instructed to teach patients how to inject illicit drugs directly into their intravenous lines. The Island Health Directive explicitly states, and I quote, if a patient has an IV or catheter, provide education on injecting into lines, end quote. The minister can say it isn't allowed. It is happening every single day in hospitals across the province. So when is this minister or this premier going to do the right thing, listen to nurses and healthcare professionals, and end this disastrous decriminalization?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, I've been doing exactly that. It's why we put in place the relational security model and added 320 relational security officers at the support and instigation of nurses in British Columbia who were opposed, Honourable Speaker, to a privatized model that had been put in place by the previous government. We are, Honourable Speaker, working on...
Members. Minister
Honourable Speaker, what I have been clear is that the rules will be the same in every hospital in BC. Included in that process is direct discussions we have had with nurses, with health sciences professionals, with healthcare workers, with doctors, with ambulance paramedics in BC, Honourable Speaker, both over the last number of months and in the last number of weeks and the last few days. We are going to continue to take steps to ensure that the rules are understood, that the rules are applied, and that protections for all patients that go in the hospital, every one of them, deserves care and respect. Every one of them will be enforced and applied, and we're going to continue to do that.
Prince George, Vermont supplemental.
Well, here's, for the minister's information, here's what the current rules are telling nurses in British Columbia they have to do. Nurses should be told to train patients on how to inject illicit drugs into their veins through IV lines. They are told to create a plan for substance use during admission. They are told to facilitate patient-identified substance use goals by providing burner kits with crack pipes and matches. Does the minister actually think that nurses should be forced to endure daily exposure to aggressive and volatile behavior and drug use that puts them and patients at risk? It's time the minister listened to the nurses who are standing up across this province and begging him to do something. It is time for this minister to acknowledge that those are the rules that are currently in place. He had the opportunity to issue a directive. He refused to do it, leaving our nurses and patients at risk in hospitals. Will he get up today, do the right thing, and end the decriminalization instead?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, everyone who is admitted to an acute care hospital deserves the best possible of care. Everyone needs to have their interests protected. Many people, of course, the vast majority, enter with no substance abuse issues, but serious health issues. Their interests need to be protected. If someone has a car accident and ends up in hospital, their interest needs to be protected. Everyone's interests need to be protected. When students come into the hospital, Honorable Speaker, their needs and their interests have to be understood by the care staff, Honorable Speaker, and that will continue to happen. But I'll tell you, Honorable Speaker, the rules will be in place, rules will be applied, and what we're doing and what Honorable Speaker, and I know the Honorable Member for Prince George Vale Mott meets with nurses. I meet with nurses again and again and again. I hear their views. I hear their passion for supporting their patients and the absolute need we have to support nurses and ensure that people are safe, and health sciences professionals, and healthcare workers, and ambulance paramedics, and people who work in the community, Honorable Speaker. They all deserve our support and protection, and they will have it.
House Leader of the Third Party.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday was Earth Day, and so it's important that the Minister of Environment answer some questions about our environment. And in 2011, the current Minister of the Environment wrote to the Saanich Peninsula Wastewater Commission asking us to maintain a ban on the land application of biosolids within the Capital Regional District. Now, I was a member of that commissioner. I was a commissioner on the commission that the minister wrote, encouraging, and I agreed with the minister, and my vote on the record reflects that. There was strong evidence then, just as there is strong evidence now, that the accumulation of pharmaceuticals, personal care products, and PFAS, perfluoroalkyls, polyfluoroalkyls, can accumulate and concentrate in biosolids. PFAS are also known as forever chemicals. They're dangerous to human health and the environment, and scientific evidence showed 13 years ago that we should be concerned, and the evidence has only strengthened on that matter. Instead of updating the organic matter regulations, Mr. Speaker, this Minister of the Environment in 2019 wrote to the CRD requiring them to consider the land application of biosolids. It's unacceptable that the Minister of the Environment permits the toxic material to be applied to lands across the province, Mr. Speaker. So my question is to the Minister of the Environment, will he immediately update the organic matter regulation and require this to be before the end of this parliamentary session?
Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. There are a lot of complicated issues related to biosolids, and as the member noted, he supported previous direction from the ministry for a number of reasons. One of which is that we want the most beneficial use. Another of which is that we want to ensure that we are not adding to greenhouse gas emissions by simply landfilling biosolids. We are working with regional districts to find beneficial uses, and we are also updating on a regular basis our information data about the presence of contaminants of concern in biosolids and constantly updating our standards in that regard.
Member supplemental.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't say that I previously supported the ministry. What I said was I previously agreed with the minister when he was the director of the executive director of the Sierra Club, Mr. Speaker, when he was writing to the Saanich Peninsula Wastewater Commission encouraging us to maintain a ban of the land application of biosolids. That's what I was supporting, was the minister in his former role with his former belief that we should not be applying biosolids on the land, Mr. Speaker. The minister has been responsible for the Ministry of Environment for the past 7 years, and he has been negligent in updating the organic matter recycling regulation. In fact, we knew 13 years ago that the regulation was grossly inadequate. It remains the same today. In 2011, we demanded the CRD and the province operate from the precautionary principle on biosolids, and that's basically what we're requesting of the Minister of the Environment to do now more than a decade later. Instead, the minister has deployed the opposite approach, Mr. Speaker, failing to modernize the OMAR and failing to require the proper testing of that material. He said to my colleague in budget estimates just last week, Mr. Speaker, that he was going to amend it so that the director could require sampling. How is it that we're not having basic sampling of this waste material? So my question is, again, to the Minister of the Environment, will he require the organic matter recycling regulation to be updated before this place adjourns and goes to another election and we go into another parliament where this Minister of the Environment has failed to protect the interests of our environment and the citizens of British Columbia?
Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I would say to the member and to all members of this House is we are constantly updating our information base. We are constantly updating our regulations, and we take the concerns of British Columbians in communities around the province very seriously. It is difficult to satisfy everyone because the fact is, as a society, we produce contaminants. We need to address them in the best way possible. We need to ensure that we are protecting all of our communities against climate change and simply burying the problem. I receive regular reports from staff on their progress with the organic matter recycling regulation. We are looking at it. As I mentioned earlier, we are reviewing the science and searching for more science on contaminants of emerging concern. We'll continue that work. That work will continue today, next week, and it will continue with governments in future mandates.
Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And now that Bill 25 is before the House, this bill sets an unprecedented recognition of Aboriginal title underneath private land. It's never been done before. So according to case law, recognition or alienation of Aboriginal title requires compensation. So my question, quite frankly, is to the Minister of Finance. Since there is going to be Aboriginal title recognized under private land and there is undetermined Aboriginal title right across this province, how much is the minister putting aside in the recognition of Aboriginal title in all areas across this province that will be alienating on private land?
Minister of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to my colleague for the question. Yesterday's historic recognition of Aboriginal title in Haida Gwaii was unprecedented. Never before has a bill been introduced to do what the courts have asked us to do. Never before in our history have we not responded to a court case, but rather introduced a bill to address...
Member, Minister. Also, you know, like this bill is in front of the House, so I don't think we should be dealing with this in the question period. Member, if you have another question, we'll take that.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The issue is not the bill that's before the House, and I respect your guidance on this. The issue is Aboriginal title being recognized, and the fact that Aboriginal title could exist anywhere around this province. And the precedent is now being set. And this is going to create a tremendous amount of liability for the province of British Columbia. For example, in downtown Vancouver or downtown Victoria, anywhere around the province. And the question around this, with this liability that is now being created, has the Minister of Finance put aside money in a budget associated with this? But more importantly, is this NDP government planning to do this to taxpayers, or are they going to put that burden onto the landowners themselves?
Minister?
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the opportunity to respond to this question. Yesterday's introduction of Bill 25 was about the specific request that we settle a lawsuit in order to recognize Aboriginal title in British Columbia. There was no commensurate requirement for compensation sought during that time. Under treaty, of course, we do have fiscal arrangements that the governments of Canada and British Columbia enter into and passed by legislation at both the federal and provincial level, in which compensation going forward is the case. Redress is often requested, but that was not the subject of yesterday's bill, and that will not be forthcoming as a consequence of Bill 25.
Member for Surrey South.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Just like the first leaked health authority memo, the memo from Island Health tells nurses, quote, offer supplies and ensure they're easily accessible, end quote, actively promoting drug use within hospitals. Moreover, acute care nurses who encounter patients using illicit substances are explicitly instructed to stand by and allow them to finish. A frustrated nurse highlights the NDP hypocrisy, quote, we're handing out supplies, and then we get mad for smoking in the hospital and we're giving them the equipment, end quote. Why is the premier distributing crack pipes and needles, sponsoring drug use inside hospitals instead of ending his disastrous policy and protecting healthcare workers?
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you, Honourable Speaker. What we're doing, Honourable Speaker, is taking specific actions to ensure that everybody in the hospital is safe and gets a high quality of care. And I would say, Honourable Speaker, and this starts with people who enter as well, and people who enter the hospital who have no substance abuse issues, they deserve a high quality of care, they deserve to have a smoke-free environment, they deserve to be protected equally. Staff and their interests need to be protected as well. In terms of people who come into the hospital with addiction issues, of course, when anyone ever comes into the hospital with issues, we need healthcare professionals to know what those issues are so that they can address those issues. What we are doing, and we'll have in British Columbia, are clear rules everywhere. So the rules are the same in Fort St. John as they are in Comox, as they are in Vancouver, as they are in Cranbrook, Honourable Speaker. So that everybody understands what the rules are, that we will continue to support our staff through actions like the relational security measure, and that people will know, for example, that it is not allowed, Honourable Speaker, not allowed to smoke in hospital, not allowed to do those things, and we will be very clear, and it is our absolute intention to continue to enforce that.
Surrey South Supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Not everyone is getting high-quality care. Not everyone is safe in the hospital, and the NDP have absolutely handcuffed the ability to deal with these problems through decriminalization. Regardless of this minister saying, Mr. Speaker, that it's not allowed, it is happening. The NDP's failed decriminalization policy in our hospitals has been an unmitigated disaster, stripping police of their ability to do anything about the chaos. The Premier has turned hospitals and pharmacies into drug-dealing hotspots, and he has placed communities at risk. Yesterday, I raised the NDP is concealing a secret report by Dr. Jonathan Calkins. Additional information that we've received says that that report looks at the NDP's legalization of hard drugs in British Columbia. Will the Premier table Dr. Culkin's report today and end his failed experiment of taxpayer-funded drug trafficking and decriminalization?
Minister of Health.
Well, Honourable Speaker, yesterday, numerous opposition members asserted that the Premier had commissioned such a report. He had, Honourable Speaker. And presumably they know they haven't because the question is framed differently today, Honourable Speaker.
Member, Minister will continue. Members, Minister has the floor. Minister will continue.
Honourable Speaker, members of the House will know that Dr. Bonnie Henry, the provincial health officer under her authority, is doing a review of these policies. A report was issued on February 1st. She said very publicly at that time there would be a follow-up report in the next 4 or 5 months. As part of that work, she commissioned Dr. Culkins to do a paper on issues related to the economics of safe supply, which seems like a normal thing to do. Dr. Culkins wasn't familiar with this work or this commissioning, but do know.
Members, Minister.
Dr. Henry commissioned this report. Her report will be coming out. It's our expectation in May and June. There will be appendices to that report, and this research paper will be provided as part of that. She's seeking this work because Dr. Henry reaches out to different opinions and wants different opinions on the subject to support her work that she does on behalf of the people of British Columbia, what you'd expect her to do. And that's why the report was commissioned, and it will be made public at the time of Dr. Henry's report to the next report to the public on this issue.
Member for Richmond North Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP MLA for Richmond Queensborough boasted just 2 weeks ago that, and I quote, decriminalization works. end quote. But that's not true. This NDP's drug experiment has unleashed crime, chaos, and disorder. Police are now powerless because this NDP legalized drug use in hospitals, in parks, and in beaches. Residents of Richmond reject this NDP's reckless drug consumption size and decriminalization policy. Why won't the Premier end this failed experiment and accept BC United's plan to protect our community?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Look, I think that what all British Columbians agree on is that we need to move away from criminalizing people who are struggling with addictions. This is particularly critical at this time, given the devastating impacts of the toxic drug crisis. And decriminalization is a tool that helps us achieve that. It is a tool that we put in place in concert with partners in law enforcement and healthcare and our municipal partners to achieve that end. And it is a tool that had support from all members of this House, including the member who raised the question.
Members will wait for their turn. Member, Minister. Members, member will come to order. Member for Caribou Chilcotin, wait for your turn. Minister will continue.
Honourable Speaker, it is troubling to see members say one thing one day and another thing another day when it comes to this issue. In a circumstance where we lost 7 British Columbians yesterday, we will lose 7 British Columbians today, we will lose 7 tomorrow, and that is because every single jurisdiction across the country, across the continent, is dealing with
members,
poisoned...
It's not very smart to interrupt others, please. Member, it's not funny either. Member for Skeena. Member? Next question, or Minister will complete.
I'll continue. Thank you, Honourable Speaker, potentially without interruption. But, you know, the question was asked about decriminalization, and I understand that British Columbians want us both to shift away from criminalizing people who are struggling with addictions who need to be connected to care, and at the same time, of course, they don't want to give up their public spaces in that process. And so we are taking action to ensure that we work with our policing partners so that they have the tools that they need, so that we work with our healthcare system to ensure that British Columbians have access to the care that they need. That is why we have a record expansion of treatment services across the province. That is why we have introduced legislation around public use. That's work
Thank
that we'll
you,
continue
Minister.
To do with our partners
Thank you.
To ensure that
Thank you, Minister.
In the context of, of this
Minister
public
will
health
take her
emergency,
seat.
We protect
Minister
British
will
Columbians.
Take her seat. Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I'll have to combine the two questions into one after that four-minute non-answer. But let's be clear. This government applied to the federal government for a decriminalization certificate before the committee had even been struck to talk about decriminalization. No, I know this government has problem following through on campaign promises, but decrim was actually in their 2020 campaign as well about fast-tracking decriminalization. This is all on the Premier and this government. Every single day, Mr. Speaker, the evidence keeps mounting and mounting about their failed decriminalization policies that they've put in place. They have not enacted the other things that they should have. around safeguards, around making sure that the healthcare workers felt safe, and making sure that people that share a 2 or 4-bed ward in a hospital room aren't having to endure meth and crack and fentanyl being smoked in the room on supplies being forced to be given out by healthcare professionals, having to watch addicts inject themselves with their own intravenous systems based on guidance by healthcare professionals on memos provided by health authorities. We now have 2 of 5 health authorities providing that guidance, yet the minister wants to pretend it's not actually happening, Mr. Speaker. It is absolutely a failure in every single way. So let's look at this last few weeks in this session, Mr. Speaker. The Land Act, BC United. BC United.
Members, all members. Members.
Members.
Shh. Calm down. Minister, BC member,
United,
continue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. BC United puts pressure on the government about the Land Act. Poof. It magically disappears. BC United is putting pressure on Bill 12. Just yesterday, the Attorney General and the Premier were adamant Bill 12 was going to keep moving forward. Today, poof, it magically disappears. Well, Mr. Speaker, BC United has been putting pressure on this government to end decriminalization today. If they won't end it today, will they at least be consistent and end it tomorrow?
Government House Leader.
Thank you so much, Honourable Speaker. And speaking of pressure, Honourable Speaker, speaking of pressure, first, the Leader of the Opposition supports our initiatives to ensure their safety in Surrey for Surrey Police. And then the BC Conservatives come along and change the position. Oh, no, they were happy to talk about pressure a moment ago, Honourable Speaker.
Members. Members will come to order now, and the House Leader will conclude his remarks.
I will conclude my remarks, Honourable Speaker, by saying this. The members are talking about pressure. We clearly know where the pressure is coming for them, Honourable Speaker. Every single day, our priority in this government is to support British Columbians, Honourable Speaker. Support people when they go to the hospital, ensure that we're saving people's lives, because we're seeing far too many of our loved ones pass away from this overdose crisis, Honourable Speaker. It's important work. We're committed to making sure that it's happening in British Columbia. All my colleagues on this side feel this pressure every single day, making sure our constituents know that we're going to continue to support them during these challenging times.
The bell ends the question period.